Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello everyone, it is the final word show, the final word show before Christmas. Thank you, Ross Chandley. And the first final word show where Liverpool are the champions of the world. I am Paul Machin. I am joined by Ross Chandley, by Tom Dalton and by Elle Smith for this one. Ross.
Hi.
Hi.
Good time.
Yeah, you and Tom have been gallivanting around the world, seeing the sights in Qatar.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to imagine. Like, well, I can because I've seen us win the Champions League and the Super Cup in the last 6 months or so. But amazing.
Yeah, a great experience. We were kept very, very busy, but obviously we were there for the footy. Two decent games, but obviously we're world champions, and it kind of justifies the whole of going out there in the first place, taking the first team with us, and obviously getting up at the Carabao Cup while we were over there I was fine with. But going back it up by winning it, and that's exactly what the players did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot in the media, hasn't there, the Tom, about what Liverpool should and shouldn't have done. And a lot of this is just, it's opinion clickbait, actually, from the mainstream media, which is mad.
Yeah.
This is what Liverpool should be doing. I'm sorry, but try telling the players, try telling the fans who are out there, try telling the fans watching it at home, that Liverpool should have chosen the Carabao Cup over this bollocks.
Yeah, it is, and it's funny, there's been a lot of opposition fans coming out and going, oh, it's a Nottingham Cup, and then I think Robbo came out and said it, like, no one's asked about it in England because not many English clubs get to get there. Yeah. Not many English clubs win the Champions League to then get to become the world champion, so no one's asked about it. Try telling that to Flamengo fans, who haven't been there for years as well, actually, but they came over in their tens of thousands. I know Liverpool went over and, like, we got about 12,000 maybe over there. They came over, so many more, all around the city, dancing, singing. This is something that they really wanted to win, and the feeling around it was just phenomenal, and I was made up celebrating it with Ross. That was one of the best goals I've celebrated for a while, is Bobby Firmino after extra time showing just how much of a machine Liverpool are in terms of keeping it going and scoring that goal. That was just, it was a fantastic feeling to know that you're world champions.
This is the thing, I think there's a snobbery that goes with this. And we talked about this on the build-up and how I think teams and managers legitimise tournaments. And I think, look, Real Madrid were wearing their Champions of the World badge until Tuesday, Wednesday. They played El Clasico with it on their shirts. Yeah. You know, there's videos of Manchester United players jumping up and down celebrating when they won it. There's video, Lionel Messi scoring the winning goal and won. And you know what I mean? Like, it matters. You know, it's an officially recognised one. There's people trying to compare it to the Charity Shield. It's not. Charity Shield's barely a football game. Yeah. You know, as much as people might want it to be. We've gone through the lot, you know, there's a video being shared of Alisson saving against Napoli last season, basically saying that's the save that ended up, that led to Liverpool winning the continental treble. That, it's massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think rightly so as well. The amount of time that it's taken to get us to this point, why would you not want to enjoy it now that we're actually finally here? I think that it's been a good experience. I understand that Klopp had to obviously put a weakened squad out for Aston Villa, and I think he's justified in doing that, really. Yeah. I think I remember a couple of years ago when, back end of 2008, 2009, and Arsenal would do that in the Carabao Cup, and Man U would do it. They'd play their kids, and you'd see how good the next generation would be. Yeah. And even though ultimately we went out, it was a quarter final against Aston Villa that the kids went out in, and that's a big, big achievement for them. But at the same time, we've just taken off main first team all the way over to Qatar, 5,000-6,000 miles across away from Anfield, and we've put in a shift and we've took home the prize at the end of it, which is what we all wanted.
It's a lose-lose situation, isn't it? Because if you've done it the other way around, they go, well, you're disrespecting the world thing that you've already been in there, yeah. So what's he supposed to do? Yeah. If you went half and half, well, you're not going to win either of them, so what's the point? So you go off one of them. A trophy that we've never won before. Mm-hmm. So this team that have won the Super Cup, the Champions League, gone, well, we're the first group of lads at Liverpool to win this trophy for Liverpool Football Club.
Well, you can see, that. Like, you
win,
know...
Win a Carabao Cup next season.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's one of those moments, isn't it, that you can... Look, you might never win the Carabao, but odds are you will. Yeah. Because Liverpool have won it loads of times. Yeah. That is our cup. Liverpool have won that competition more times than anyone.
And you're guaranteed to be in it every season.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no guarantee that you are going to... Well, I think it was your dad that said it the other day, Paul, that you've got to finish in the top four before you even qualify for the Champions League. Then once you've qualified for the Champions League, you've got to go on to win it, obviously taking out some of the Europe's best along the way.
Yeah.
And then once you've won it, you've got a Super Cup. And then once you've won the Super Cup, you've got two extra games as well. So it's not easy to just turn around and say, we're in this every year, because it's not a given.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think my dad actually said this as well, Ross. It's a crap tournament. Like, it's crap. It's,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a big or prestigious tournament, but the final... That, you know, again, look at how Flamengo treated it, look at how their fans treated it, you know, look at the fact that they're still singing about beating us in 1981. Like, we don't,
That's based on perception, though, isn't it? If it's a crap tournament, because, like, Al Hilal, Al Sadd, Monterrey, all these teams that we don't watch in week out, just automatically assume that they're shit. And I think there was a bit of that about Flamengo as well, going to watch it, well, what's their league compared to
ours?
I
was telling my family members, and they were laughing at the name.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't have a team called Flamengo. And it's like, they are the biggest team in Brazil. They are like the best supported.
The
they've
world.
Won
yeah,
the
yeah.
most honours. Yeah. They've got like, claims, I'm getting this off the commentary, but they claim to have 40 million fans.
Yeah.
Like, honest, wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Honestly, their fans were fantastic.
And they were non-stop from start to finish. Yeah. Even when they weren't even playing, they walk around the street singing.
Si's got a great video of them in the marketplace with a trombone. Or was it a trombone or a trumpet? The saxophone, sorry. There you go. They're carrying literal brass bands around with them everywhere they go. You know what I mean? They would all brilliant.
Sounds of a championship to me, mate.
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, the competition was jagged. They had this fella on at half time who was like, way, trying to hype everyone up, because I think that was Qatar as well. They were very much trying to get people to.
It's very Americanized, isn't it? Yeah. So they're trying to sell it as that, and it was like, it was just a bit foamy.
It was a bit jagged.
Well, bear in mind,
that,
though, that like the Carabao Cup final, the league, whatever the fuck it was called when we won it, the Kenny Dalglish. They had like, they were playing rock music at half time. Yeah. They were doing the American style pizzazz to try and make that competition more relevant. So you can't sit there and tell me that the League Cup is a bigger, or it's certainly not bigger. It's got more handles. And that's about it.
It's also not Liverpool's fault that they're in that position. They're in this competition as a reward for winning the Champions League and the Super Cup. Yeah. They were in the Carabao Cup as a reward for getting through to the next round. We could play two games in 24 hours. They weren't allowed to play the main squad and then fly them all over. That's not Liverpool's fault, is it? They've made a choice and it's been justified.
Yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, I think we, Tom, we've clearly been rotating for 2 weeks, I think, with this game in mind.
Yeah.
You know, you can see with the sides we put out, and I think the side against Monterrey is weaker than it would have been, because look, let's be honest, if Van Dijk isn't ill, he plays, Henderson plays the six, and all of a sudden that's a much stronger team. But the side that we put out at the weekend is probably barring Wijnaldum, and you can make an argument over who's our best centre-back partner for Van Dijk.
Yeah.
That was the strongest team we could have put
100%.
Out
I mean, Fabinho was as well in course, there. Yeah. But that's what we were saying. As soon as we heard Van Dijk was fit on the morning of it, me and Ross did the news show, and we were like, right, there we go, it's full strength. And you knew it was full strength, and I was made up to see that, because obviously I know you spoke about it in the Monterrey final word, you must have, in terms of, look, we brought on the big guns and he changed the game. Mm-hmm. He did, and you could see the quality we've got there, and you can see all that. But that team is not just better quality-wise. That team, in terms of, I spoke about it being a machine, it's better in terms of physicality and carrying on till the end. You're watching players like Jordan Henderson, Naby Keita, and that go until the very, very end of their shift and making sure that you get it over the line. That's what the thing that Flamengo and us, that's the biggest difference there in terms of your squads, is we are the fittest team in the world. But I have no doubt in my mind we're the fittest team in the world, because if you're the fittest team in the Premier League, then I think you're the fittest team in the world.
Well, it showed
at the very end.
You can see exactly, well, look at their goalkeeper going down with Camp. You know, their players are falling apart. You know, and we've been through a busy period. Look, to be fair, they've played like 80 games. this season or something stupid.
That was the
like
last
that,
game of their season, yeah.
I think that was partly tactical as well, though, because it was when Liverpool were getting on top and just going, well, we just calm it down 5 minutes by three of our players dropping on the floor.
Yeah.
that's what they were doing, weren't they?
Yeah, it was. I want to talk about Joe Gomez. I think that's the best game he's had in a year for Liverpool.
And you know what? I wouldn't even argue with you there, mate. I think he was brilliant the other day for us. I think what he's probably lacked in the last 12 months is just that confidence and belief in himself a little bit again, that he is of that level where he can partner next to Virgil van Dijk, yeah, and we can steady the ship. And I think, obviously, with Matip being as stellar as he was for probably longer than what most fans expected him to be as well. Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, Gomez then being shoehorned in soon as Matip got injured. I think that reconfirmed his doubt in himself a little bit. But he's just worked through that. And I think that goes to show the credit that some of, as you said before, the mentality of some of these players, they know when they get their chance to come in and drop into this squad how important it is to not be the one that drops the ball. Yeah. And I think he was... Obviously, Virgil van Dijk is a better defender, but I think he played a better game than Virgil the other night for us.
I actually agree with that, and that's the thing, Ross. The thing I remember saying when it looked like he was going to get this spell of games was, this is not like us dropping Seth Vandenberg in, who's totally unproven. This lad who proved himself. You know, the first half of last season, I think he was outstanding. You know, we were having conversations about, is he in better form than Virgil van Dijk for spells of that. It's not worked for him for whatever reason this season, but he's got the talent, and I think that was probably the first game. We've seen little bits and pieces, but he's had a little ricks here and there within individual games in recent weeks. But we've been keeping more clean sheets with him in the team than I think we've been keeping prior to it. And again, I just, though, his covering play, his all round composure on the ball, striding out of defence and what have you. I just thought he'd be brilliant.
Yeah, I think you're only as good as your last performance, but I think you're right. This game's been like the Arsenal game where he's playing with kids. Yeah. Not his fault. He's been playing at right back, not his fault. The Montreal game, he's playing Jordan Henderson and they're getting balls around the back. So it was like, I think you go to blame Joe Gomez as he's the leader in that defence or the organiser, but no one's kind of took control in that sense. Whereas this game, having Van Dijk next to him, having Trent at right back and being in a back five, as well as having the consistency in that position, it's just confidence for him. I think once he's got that run of games under his belt, I think right now is the time where he knows Lovren's injured, he knows Matip's injured. He needs to perform now, because if he doesn't, he's just someone to take his place.
The best part about that game is it showed every part of his skill set. He had to do the recovery pace. We saw that when he comes back, and fantastic challenge. He has that composure on the ball. He can play that ball. He's not as good as Matip at doing it, but he can play that ball into feet. He's also got the little burst of pace to get away from people when he's got the ball at his feet, mm-hmm, and stride into midfield and make things happen there. He's got the heading ability, because they put it to his side every single time, because they know they're getting knocked out of Virgil. It showed every single thing that we know that he's good at. He's not a right back, he's a centre half who can do it all on his day, and his day is usually what happens whenever he takes to the field. I think he has struggled this season, but I think it's exactly what Ross has spoken about there, is he's getting put with kids or people who he's not used to being next to and being charged as this leader, so it all goes onto his shoulders. Yeah. When you have someone like Virgil van Dijk who's telling you, right, okay, you've got a little lapse in concentration, get back there, you've got a world-class mentality next to you, and then that ups his game, as Virgil does, but he's got that raw talent anyway. I think I'd love to see him take that spot away from Matip and Lovren, mm-hmm, purely because they're getting on a bit now. Yeah. If you can then cement that position for next season and go, there you go, and then the older lads are your FA Cup fellas who were then tasked with being the leaders, which they're better at doing because they've done it for longer. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I just fantastic to see a lad who's really struggled, and I got no sense of that from his performance. And you know what you see a lot of is teams target behind Trent,
yeah,
and he stops that being a thing. You know, like the good thing you've got when you've got Fabinho, Matip, and Van Dijk in, you're impenetrable aerially, so you can't go long against Liverpool because we eat that up all day. But what teams can do is go direct, and Monterrey caused us loads of problems doing this. But because of Gomez's positional sense and his recovery pace, you can obviously, if Trent's pushing up and Trent's not back in for whatever reason, it leaves a big hole. But Gomez just eats up the ground. Yeah. It's impossible to get past.
Well, we was watching a few of the highlights as well just before we started, and I think it was that one where he makes that recovery run just after Trent loses the winger. And again, it's coming into the box, and Trent almost puts an hand on him as if to say, I'm going to pull you back. He reads the space well, knows, I can't do that, because if you go down, and let's be honest, Dave was just going down with a bit of wind blowing over them.
Yeah.
You go down, it's going to be a foul or a pen, whatever it is. And Joe Gomez just reads the situation. He carries on his run, and he puts the block in the end. And I think it was a game for him where he was able to just, focus on the jobs that he needed to do right, getting his individual battles and his individual things in the areas that he needed to play and pick up. He got them all right the other day, and I think that'll be something that'll give him the confidence, hopefully, moving into the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bobby Firmino, what a mad game of footy, Ross.
You know, I celebrated three of his goals, and two of them weren't goals.
He's two absolutely brilliant chances. Obviously, the one right at the opening of the game, he sticks over the bar. The one at the start of the second half, where he does everything right, apart from it's the post, and then ultimately gets the winner, which we'll kind of let's go through it. It was a weird game for Bobby Firmino. Yeah. He showed just how amazingly dangerous he can be. But, you know, I'm glad he ultimately gets the goal. Because we win the cup, but it would have been one of those games where we might have been talking about the wastefulness or the lack of, you know, whatever, cutting edge in front of goal.
That's very much what it felt like as the game went on. I think it was the one after he hit the post, just going, this is just going to be one of them days where we aren't scoring. But I think you can always bank on this Liverpool side to continue to create chances. I was comparing it to, like, we had Ricky Lambert, Barini and whoever else it was, of just creating nothing. Yeah. Whereas this side had the mentality where don't give up and go. Actually, I think Gomez did a piece about it. It was like, we're going to give up, our heads don't drop. Yeah. We'll just carry on going. And that's when the fitness comes into it. We'll go again. We'll wait till you're tired out mentally and physically. Liverpool don't do that. And I just think, like I said, the one where it's the post, I turn around and celebrate it. Turned back round and the ball wasn't in the corner. I was like, how the fuck has that happened? How have you missed that? Yeah. The first one's just kind of finding his lines. He's trying to love the goalkeeper, the audacity of doing stuff. And again, even for his goal, I thought he fucked it up. Mm. I was like, just hit it. And he's three, sits the goalkeeper down. It's a quality finish. But again, he's someone who hasn't been in his most prolific form of late. So that's why you're thinking, oh, that's it. It's just not going to happen. But
it's just won us the competition.
And do you know what I loved about Firmino the other day? More, almost as much as his goal, it was, I think they had two corners. And in those two corners, it was Bobby that was clearing our lines for us.
Yeah.
And it was like, at first I was watching thinking, who was the defender there? Yeah. And then the replay showed it was Bobby, and I was thinking, that's brilliant. Because if he wasn't reading the game, and what striker reads the game as a defensive point of view and thinks, I need to drop back in because there's a second ball coming in 10 seconds, and I know it is.
Yeah.
And he was on it, and I just thought, that's just brilliant.
Absolutely.
Well, it's funny because you spoke about Flamengo being one of the most successful sides in Brazil. He'll have known that. He'll have gone into this game going, these aren't any joke, lads. He will have told them, and so will have Alisson and all the other Brazilian lads in the team. Obviously, they had a bit of flair. They were Megs and players here and there. That bit of flair for the second chance when he hits the post, he lets it run past him, he flicks it over the centre-half's head, and then just for a bit of luck, misses by well, he hits the post, and you're thinking that is Bobby Firmino in a nutshell. And all them Brazilian fans will have known that, they watch him play for the national team, and that will have spurred him on a little bit more as well. It's telling that he had the chances for Liverpool. I love the fact that he just carried on going. And
look how he scores the winner.
Yeah.
The chances he's missed, it's the hardest of the chances almost by the end of it, because obviously the way he takes it, I don't know whether it is, if he just takes it first time, it might be slightly less so. But the point is that's an extra time. If that's a lad who's lucky or he's not very good or whatever, he's not in the right position, and he fucks that up.
Yeah.
But to have the coolness, the calmness, the composure to just be in that situation, and he just commands that situation. Because again, take the shot, no, drops the shoulder, take the shot, no, drops the shoulder again, take the shot, oh yes, sound, run away, celebrating, you've just won the club.
It's not a goal of someone who's short of confidence, even though he hasn't been great over the past few games, but he knows that he's been able to rely on Mo Salah for a few games, Sadio Mane for a few games, Naby Keita for a few games, and now he's going, it's my time to shine, boys. Mm-hmm. Yous have done that for me, I'll do it for yous now. And I love the fact that, again, there's a lot of strikers. I mean, Troy Deeney hadn't scored a goal for 9 months, and then he put a penalty away against United.
Yeah.
9 months. Yeah. And I can't fathom a world where Bobby Firmino hasn't scored for 9 months. So we're talking about, we have different levels than all these other teams nowadays in terms of creating chances, scoring goals. Bobby Firmino's not scored a goal for a month, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I think like that, but upset with it. He scored more goals in Qatar than he has on Merseyside this season, which is
that is mad. To be fair,
it's a bit fine by me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very fine.
I mean, until this point.
Yeah.
Fine up until now. Then now change it, Bobby. Speaking of the Brazilians, Ross, I thought Alisson was once again, you know, I think he was more pronounced against Montenegro. I think he had overall probably more saves to make.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of just outstanding stops in this game.
Yeah, I think he makes them look easy as well. When you've seen him back on the replay, you think you're a sound, but like the more he's pushing it away, he's got to get down low and quick when it's a snatch shot. It just proves why we spent all that money on him for both those games and in recent form, where you can penetrate our defence, but then there's still another wall you've got to try and get past, and it's Alisson. It's glorious to have him in our team.
Yeah. There was one where he comes out, and he's been doing this a little bit, where he's a sweeper keeper, been coming out. There was one, and I was a bit worried. He came out, and I was like, don't you dare. If you pass that to Robbo, winning shit, don't pass. And he just went, I know, and put it out of play. Yeah. And you're thinking, another goalkeeper could have played it there, and then they would have closed down Robbo.
Another
ball
playing goalkeeper, someone who knows his role is to play the ball, looks for a pass that isn't
exactly
there.
And he just went, no, lads, calm down. It's going out of play because someone fucked up. I'm calming it down, everyone get in position and we'll go again. And that's, an elite mentality. It runs through this club. You're all right to put the ball out to touch sometimes. That's fine. And he knows when to pick his moments. And again, distribution's fantastic as normal. Ross spoke about that save. It's just nice having someone like that, a calm presence in goal and going, we don't need to worry. If it gets through the lines and it's 1-1, I back him more than 50%. It's mad just how good he is.
He's something else. You know, we've talked about it. It seems like another lifetime since Karius. You know, and those situations. Someone goes through on our goal now, and I just presume it's not going in.
Yeah,
which is absolutely insane.
It's fantastic to see.
And I think most strikers or whoever it is that is running through, they probably think, fuck, I've got to beat Alisson. Yeah. And that's the first thing. And like, normally it's those, we said it before plenty of times, it's the small details in big games now when you're playing Liverpool, but that is a detail that people just can't overlook. Yeah. You've finally got past Van Dijk. You feel like you deserve a goal. You've just got past Van Dijk. You've got past the Gomez or the Matip. Now let me just score. And then you look up and it's not Karius anymore. It's not Mignolet. It is Alisson, and he is worth his bread and butter. He's an amazing goalkeeper. And I think he's just got, as you said there, mate, he's got a calm and presence that like he can just kind of give that energy out and it feeds through the whole team. Yeah. And the team believe, we've got the best shot stopper on the planet.
Well, there's a bit of confidence and arrogance about him to think of all the stuff that he's won, like the individual awards on top of everything else, in a year of going, I'm the best fucking goalkeeper on the planet. Went too right.
Yeah, it's mad because Dan Kennett, our good friend Dan Kennett, as he tweeted yesterday, Alisson Becker's played 5 win or go home matches for Liverpool, either finals or games where we faced elimination. Flamengo, Salzburg away, Spurs, Barcelona home, Napoli home. In those matches, he saved all 26 opposition shots on target, including 6 big chances.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. Wow. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Has he kept clean sheets in them as well, then, am I thinking? If he saved every
shot on goal. Yeah. That is, like, forget about elite mentality, then. That's elite. That's just elite. That's top of the top.
That's Matrix shit, isn't it?
That's genuinely. But then again, doing it when it matters, but he doesn't just do it when it matters. He does it, it matters every game, to Liverpool going for the Premier League, but he does it week in, week out anyway.
Yeah.
And that's just his shot stopping. You don't think about the closing down space and all that and the distributions. Another massive part of it. You're looking at it and you know for a fact, I think there was one, it happens every single game, but Robbo's that outlet ball every time. And Robbo just finds a little pocket of space. You think you've got to either bend it round with a throw or get it round that way with a kick. And he can do it on point every single time. Yeah. He hardly ever loses. I think there was one when he hit it to touch.
There was one moment when he got closed down and the guy got a touch on it. Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, again, the positions in which that's happening, they're far less dangerous than what, you know, look at the one for Adrian. We know the two that happened for Adrian. When it's right in front of your goal, you're on the 6-yard line. If you're going to do that, be away from your goal, and ultimately it's a touch, not a
compliment. But even things like that, sorry mate, I'm fine with doing that, passing that from the back. It was like a season and a half ago, I was like, okay, just get it out, get rid of it. Whereas now it's like, oh, it's fine, I'll trust him to pick the pass.
Yeah.
Someone's 5 yards away from him, barring that one, fair enough, he'll pick someone out.
I think he's got give confidence to the strikers as well, as mad as it might seem, the fact that they're in training with him every day, and they know, you know, your heads could drop when you miss a chance, but they know we're not always going to score past Alisson. But in training, we have to keep going until we either get the goals that Klopp wants us to do, or we do the drill in the way that he wants us to perform it, and you keep going. So in a match, it's the same thing. We miss a chance, all right, it doesn't matter. We'll get another opportunity. We'll work for that other opportunity. And I think in terms of a mental thing now for us, it's that we've got the best keeper in the world. If we can beat Alisson and Shane, we can beat whoever's in there 6 minutes. Yeah,
it's a good point. Yeah. You've seen videos of Jordan Pickford on the lash at the dart. yes. I guess the shadow of the game, I think Klopp referred to it, Ross, is Oxlade-Chamberlain going off injured. I mean, it's good to see him. He's got the boot on and he doesn't stop him getting involved with the celebrations, which you'd hope bodes well in terms of how serious it is or whatever, but it's a blow losing. I actually think probably Keita would have come off. I think he was one of the ones who wasn't really having an impact in, as much in the game.
I thought it was miles better than Chamberlain, to be honest. I don't think Chamberlain.
I think in terms of the there was a spell just before the injury where Chamberlain's still bombing around. He looks the fresher of the midfielders. Yeah. Keita's not actually tracking back. There's a moment where Klopp on the touchline goes, he basically shouts at Naby and goes like, are you all right? Are you all right? Well, fuck him, run then, dickhead. Like, you mean? So, on the flip of it, though, of course, I thought Adam Lallana come in and was actually everything we needed in the midfield.
Yeah, the Chamberlain stuff was just horrific when you initially saw it, because he kind of like half crawled on the floor and just looked up at the bench and just like, oh shit, he's done it again. You think it's gone again, and he's down for 4 or 5 minutes. Luckily, he has got the boot on. He managed to walk off. He joined in the celebrations, and you know, he looks like was relatively happy. We don't know what it is yet, but at least we know it's not as bad as it was. Adam Lallana, I'm fine with when he comes on. That's the second time where I've come. That's 13-14 Lallana right there. You know, turns of energy. He's a squad player. He knows that now. If he wants to come on and do a job, I don't have big expectations of him because I don't need to have.
Yeah.
Because he just needs to come in and fill in. And he does that fine. I don't expect him starting week out. He doesn't need to.
Well, he's just come off the back of a game where he played DM and he looked knackered by the end of that game.
Yeah.
And he's just come in. This is the point. He's going at the end of the season. And hopefully people will be able to appreciate him for what he is. Not Liverpool's best player, Tom, but he's a fantastically gifted footballer. He's very, very intelligent.
Yeah.
And he's got a fierce determination that runs through him that people don't give him credit for because they see the Cruyff turns and presume he's like a massive fanny or whatever. But he's not. He's a very committed footballer.
No, he is. He loves the press. Yeah. He absolutely loves that style of football. That's why when Klopp first came in, he was our best player for that midfield because he'd come in and do that job. And when he played the 10 the other week against Everton, fantastic in doing that as well. It was interesting for me because obviously I was watching the substitutes every time they came out, they got booed by the Flamengo fans, which is quite funny. But he wasn't part of the group warming up. It was Milner, it was Origi, and it was Shaqiri warming up on the side, getting told stuff. But then Adam Lallana comes on, and as you see, he's getting told stuff by Pep Linders. And you're thinking, oh, wow, so, right, he's telling him, you need to be there. And he just picked the ball up in midfield, turned on it, and drove forward. And you're thinking, this guy, he's getting on early 30s, sorry. Obviously, you'd think, oh, it doesn't have the stamina and that to get about, but he just puts in a shift. Absolutely brilliant. You're right in terms of it's what we needed. I think the game changed. As soon as he came on, we were able to get more of a foothold in an attacking area and make things happen. And we started streaming forward a bit more. Yeah. It just kind of flipped the mentality. And then they changed the system and that freed up Naby Keita in the midfield.
Yeah.
That little pawn moving changed so much on the field. It was great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about the...
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Probably one of the worst refereeing performances in the history of professional football. The first 2 minutes of the game, I thought, oh, this referee's all right. He's letting stuff go. He's not buying into some of the theatrics. He's explaining all his decisions to the players on the pitch. And there's a couple of times he's going, you fouled there, you fouled there. If you foul again, I'll book you. And I quite liked the way that he was conducting himself. But it became very clear very soon that he was a normal person, an untrained person, performing a role that he's seen done before by other people. Kind of like Phil Neville playing for Everton.
Or Martin Atkinson.
Well, yeah. But like, you know, when you got he's clearly watched, or a bit like Catch Me If You Can, with Leonardo DiCaprio, when he watches hospital videos and picks up all the lingo and stuff. Yeah. He was absolutely fucking abysmal.
I think he was shit, and I think he was just a little bit spineless. I think those Flamenco players just got into his head for whatever reason. I don't know why, but they seem to... I think it was part of their tactics, and, you know, I don't blame them for having those type of tactics. You've got to do what you've got to do, I suppose. Yeah. But he was buying into their play acting. He was buying into them rolling around in the theatrics, as you said. And I just thought at some point, it was the Rafinha one for me. And I loved what Robbo did with Mane. It was that little episode at the just before half time, and Mane literally he gets the ball, and then the player goes down, and then the ref blows, and Mane gets booked. And I'm looking, thinking, you've booked him for that.
The guy, he jumps on Mane's back.
Yeah, and pulls him first.
And
pulls him,
and Mane spins and throws him off.
Yeah.
And the referee books Mane, and Robbo just comes up and goes, "Don't worry, I'll get him."
Yeah. And then he does. He actually does it in the second half. Oh, that was great. But it was little things like that. And I was just thinking, that was a little bit bizarre. And then that's obviously before half-time. And then obviously the VAR stuff towards the back end of the match. And I just thought, FIFA have threw him into the Lions then.
My issue with this, Ross, is... I'm going to word this carefully. But a Qatari person can be the best referee in the world, but if you are reffing in Qatar and that's your basis of experience, you cannot be the best referee in the world. And that's the kind of, you know, it's not about where he's from, it's about the standard at which he's refereeing on a weekly basis, which hampers him there. Because if you want that to be a big prestigious tournament, if you want that to be the World Cup for clubs, then you can't just grab some fella at the local association and chuck him onto that stage.
No, you need the qualifications and experience, don't you, behind you, of managing two teams of the calibre that you've mentioned there. There was loads.
Now, bear in mind, I think it's Graham Poole booked the same player three times in a World Cup game once.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have to be careful, you know what I mean?
But equally, why not have the refs who manage the Champions League final, the Super Cup, or, you know, each individual one, then kind of pull them all together and go, actually, it was one of you because you have the experience. Yeah. But it was just the fact that, you're right, you know, he kept buying everything, and there was fouls that he was giving for them, Liverpool doing the same thing, or even with Liverpool, like, I think Naby Keita got a foul game against him for winning the ball.
And it was like, what
is going on in the VAR stuff?
A few of them.
Like, I still don't know.
You might not have seen it, because unless it was on the big screen or whatever, but the amount of, it became, like, bemused expressions from Liverpool players, which slowly turned to frustration, which turned to anger over the course of the game. The referee blows for full time, and Jordan Henderson basically screams.
Rips him a new one.
Like,
I know, he was doing that the whole game.
But like, the game's over, Ross. Yeah. Like, the game's over. Like, my driving instructor was a knobhead, and I vowed that if I passed my test, I was going to tear a strip off him. But I was so happy that I passed my driving test, I gave him a hug instead and let it go. Jordan Henderson's first response to winning the Club World Cup is to turn around and go like, "Out of your face, you dickheads, you shit dickheads." Horrendous.
They got the medals, didn't they?
And they got the fucking flag side. The linesman got his flag side.
Really? All the teams got the medals, and then the refs went up and got the medals. The whole crowd, not just Liverpool fans, everyone. The whole crowd booed him. And his team just went, no, that was abysmal. And to be fair, the VAR stuff, he got right. By the letter of the law, he got it right. He got the decision wrong to start with because he thought it was inside the box and not outside the box. But by the letter of the law, that if it's a penalty, If he's given a penalty and then VAR rules it not a penalty, it's uncontested by the attacking team. It's a drop ball for the defending team. That's a rule.
It's a fucking stupid rule.
It's a stupid rule.
The problem is that it's a foul
on Sadio Mane
outside the box.
And he got it wrong.
Exactly. So he goes through, decides it's a penalty. They show him it for whatever reason. The way they showed him it was mad because they showed him the wrong angles, as they always fucking do.
Oh, he's got there for a good 3 minutes then, wasn't he?
Decides that it's nothing. It's a foul outside the box and it's a red card.
But he can't give that after the fact by the rules. It's mad. I'll get it up while you have a conversation.
Okay. But even like inside the stadium, like the big screen said, no penalty, foul outside the box. Yeah. So it was kind of like, okay, yeah, that'll do. And the next minute he's cleared it in front of the goalkeeper. And there was no announcements or nothing inside the stadium. So we just didn't have a fucking clue what was going on.
Well, even like in the graphics, they rescinded Rafinha's yellow card for it as well.
What? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Down as a no foul.
Yeah. And so like the graphic up with a cross through the yellow card.
So as we had this conversation upstairs before. If that situation happens again, can you just take a chance as a defender that you foul someone outside the box and the ref gets it wrong again? And so you don't get booked. Well, you don't get a free kick and then you don't get a penalty either. It's like, all right, I've just stopped you from scoring a goal.
And you don't get
because
he
was
card.
Through. Yeah, yeah, and you don't get anything.
Yeah. Horseshit. Because like, that's the thing. What if Mane falls and Mane has broken his ankle there or whatever, yeah, we're saying that because of the letter of the law, you can get away with breaking someone's ankle because of the... Because to be fair, it falls into the same category as all the offside stuff. You know, when you're playing on. You go, oh, we'll just play on and let the play develop before you flag offside. And
someone
the amount of
pulls a hamstring.
Also, if you're saying he's followed the letter of the law, given his previous performance throughout the whole game, consistency, he doesn't know the fucking rules.
Anyway, yeah.
Maybe it's the one instance where someone's got the rule book up and given VAR. Yeah.
Read this. Going,
it reminds me, remember we had a Sunday league team when I was living in Sheffield, and you have to send someone from your team to go and learn how to be a referee as well at that level. So we sent someone to this guy, and the first game of the season, the first day of referee school, you learn whether a match is fit to be played or not, and it was dead windy, and he basically called the game off for the first game because it was the only thing he knew about refereeing. So it was quite windy, so it was just one piece of knowledge, you know, and he used it to cancel. Yeah,
no.
But it was like that. Someone's going, oh, I remember this, getting the notebook out. Oh no, it's nothing. Horseshit, absolute fucking horseshit. We'll just have to believe you, Tom. And if Tom's wrong, let us know in the comments.
I'll get the rules and we'll put it up on the screen.
I've got Rafinha's a bell end, but we've kind of covered that. He's a massive, massive.
What was with the headgear as well?
He hurt himself in the Copa Libertadores final, apparently, and that's why he was wearing it. It's not a fashion statement.
It's definitely not.
There's a great video at the end of Mane looking at him, giving him daggers, the very end of the game. Rafinha daggers, then Robbo having a pop at him, then Henderson laughing, trying to shake his hand. Just the three different things, and they're all brilliant. The man is like, I hate you. Robbo's like, I hate you, and I'm going to tell you. Yeah. And Henderson's like, I hate you, but we won. You know what I mean?
Well, look, he brought him up. We saved the best to last. Jordan Henderson. Take a bow, Jordan Henderson. What a man. Let's just
because.
Captain of the best team in the world. Lifted the European Cup. Lifted the Super Cup, lifted the Club World Cup.
Not only does he lift it, he gives it a
good. Oh, mate. And I hypothesised on my video after the game that the only reason we let that game be as dramatic as possible so we can keep doing the Henderson Trophy lift. Yeah. Because if you just win that 5-0, it's embarrassing. It's a bit cringeworthy to do that when you've just pissed it. But to go through a really tough fourth semi-final, last gasp win, and then win an extra time, yeah, you go mad. Same with the Super Cup.
He did it. He epitomised everything that was great about Liverpool in that game. He had the quality, he had the resilience, he had the mentality. Everything that you want out of a Liverpool captain in terms of showing the players around them how to work and how to do it. He played that ball. He played the ball for Bobby, and then he played the ball for Mane to get us the goal. He's got the fitness just to keep going. He's putting out fires in the under 18th minute. He's shouting at the ref, doing what you want him to do on the pitch, making sure that Liverpool are willed to the end. Yep. It's the fans doing it, but it was Jordan Henderson just going, lads, we are good enough. I want to lift this another trophy. I want to keep my trophy lifts going. Because at the end of the day, like, we've had some great captains. He's probably lifted quite a few.
He's equal with Gerrard.
Yeah, mad.
He's lifted as many trophies as Gerrard has, and he's lifted one that Gerrard never has, and he's lifted one that no other Liverpool captain ever has as well.
And he could lift one that we've sought after for so long, and he'll be a massive part of that. And I was speaking with a cab driver on the way down, and he was basically saying, "I've never understood the Henderson hate. I sort of have done. I've understood the Henderson hate, but since he's moved further forward..."
Hate is the problem with it.
Hate, not haters in like haters on
critics,
Twitter.
Man, yeah.
Critics, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But like, he moved further forward and he was able to express himself a bit more. He wasn't confined to this role. And I think that's freed him up, just not in terms of his game, but in terms of his mentality, knowing that people appreciate him on the field, and he's been able to kick on from that. It's been great.
I've got a question for you then on what you're saying about Hendo there. How many seasons as a midfielder, and this will go to the YouTube guys as well watching, would you consider yourself, you have to do how many seasons before you're classed as a world-class midfielder? Because in my argument now, I'm thinking he's at least got 3 under his belt. It's the 13-14 season where arguably he's one of our best midfielders. And in the last 2 years, he's consistently been of the level that he was performing at the other night. And I think if it was another midfielder, as you said plenty of times, if he's Spanish, if he's French, people will wax lyrical about Jordan Henderson. It's the fact that he's, you know, a lad from Sunderland. And
it's because he's got no flair about him either. He does that dogged work that you talked about. It's not attractive to a FIFA thing or, you know, people who play, or kids who play FIFA even. It's just like, oh, he just runs about and does stuff. Whereas he fits our system. He fits what Klopp does, which makes him world class. I think he's world class in our system.
Yeah.
And under Jurgen Klopp, the jury's still out with
him. But I just don't know what he can't do.
Should have scored, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the point. If that goes in the top bin, that's what he's lacking. The only thing Jordan Henderson lacks is a few more match of the day moments. Okay. You know, the goal against Chelsea a few seasons ago is an absolute pearler, you know, up and down, top corner. If he just scored like one of them a season, I think people would have a little bit more on it. But, you know, I watch him every week and I've seen some of the best players ever to play the game play, you know, for Liverpool and against Liverpool. And, you know, we've been lucky, we've had some great sides in my lifetime and beyond. And I don't see what he doesn't have, you know. I keep putting this down. If he was French or he was Czech or he was pick any other nationality. Pretty much, there would be no doubts over him. But it's the fact that he's from Sunderland and his middle name's Brian, I think, is just like, it's just one of them, you know. And we've had to watch his development. I think maybe that's the problem.
Yeah. What you were saying then about, you know, he's world class in Klopp's system. He's played in multiple systems though, and every manager that's had him to play in their team, I've rated him. Yeah. So he was good in Brendan's system.
There's no current Premier League player who's got more appearances in the Premier League, I think, than Jordan Henderson that came out last week, I believe. Like, this is a guy, and the point is, how do you rank someone? We've seen plenty of supposedly brilliant, all these flair players, all these different kind of lads who everyone probably brighter but shorter.
Santi Cazorla, he was great for two seasons tops, and then tailed off, got injured.
We just love that, don't we? We never seem to rate longevity. We never seem to rate the lads with us. To stick around is a different challenge. Like,
until you're James Milner, until you're the other end.
Good saying John Lennon was better than Paul McCartney, but we'll never know because we never had to live with John Lennon fucking producing his 15th fucking studio album when he's fat and bloated and he's got nothing else to sing about. You know what I mean? That's what he's got. And you see these players who come in for two seasons and amazing. Everyone goes, oh, it was the absolute best ever. Jordan Henderson's just been here this whole time. He's played 10 years in the Premier League.
It's weird. I wouldn't call him world class, even though I think he is. You know what I mean?
Because you're embarrassed to him.
Yeah, no, I am.
But
he shouldn't be.
He is the captain of the best club in the world. And we're sitting here thinking, is he world class though?
I think he's also got the thing of Steven Gerrard was the captain before him, which was used as a stick to beat him with, or Xabi Alonso or Mascherano were there before him.
And because
he was so young when he started, everyone goes, well, he's not like them, therefore he's shit.
Steven Gerrard was the captain of Liverpool, ultimately, because we were a bit crap. Yeah, I mean, look, we were good. There were times when we were good throughout that period, like 08-09, we were as good as anything around that in the Premier League at that time. But Gerrard, we gave Gerrard the captain's armband as a sweetener to keep him at the club. We tried it with Suarez as well. We tried it with Coutinho a little bit as well. You know, football clubs do this when they know they're not their best players bigger than them. They use this as a political tool to try and convince them that they're a bit more or whatever. Crap teams give their best players the captain's armband. Sometimes your best player is also your best
captain. Yeah. But Jamie Carragher was the captain for Liverpool. He was the best person to be captain for Liverpool. But Gerrard was a figurehead captain. That it's like giving Alan Shearer the captain's armband at Newcastle. It happens time and time and time again. Not you. Liverpool are in a situation now where we can give the best captain the captain's armband.
Yeah, I was going to say, Gerrard's definitely better than Henderson. I know that's you didn't say that Henderson's better than Gerrard. Gerrard was by far, in a way, a better player than Jordan Henderson. But I think you're right. But then that's the best part about this team is Jordan Henderson is the best captain for the team. But then Virgil van Dijk's the best captain for the team. You've got captains in each area, each section of the pitch. You've got a captain in Alisson, you've got a captain in van Dijk, you've got a captain in Robbo, you've got a captain in Henderson, you've got a captain in Milner, Salah. Captain in Lallana.
Salah, Sadio.
You've got a captain in... Yeah, exactly. They just keep going and keep fighting through. You have these players all over the pitch who are willing to give a pop at each other. Yeah. The amount of times you see the players shouting at each other, Hendo at Chambo, Hendo at Trent, van Dijk at Hendo, van Dijk at Gini, all these players giving their opinions, it doesn't mean that they're angry with each other. It means, I know, I can see this, and they take it on board.
There's no
these
egos
players,
in there,
exactly.
Is that,
they all appreciate difference. Everyone's cooperation. They all appreciate the fact that this fella's having a pop at me because I did something wrong, and I know that. Yeah. I have the confidence within me as well to have a pop at them. Everyone's equals in that team. And yet, like Jordan Henderson having that armband to me doesn't mean anything massive. It just means that he's one of a collective of captains. These are people who go to their national sides and are captains.
I think for me, I think that, but also there's a reason amongst all them he's got the armband and he's the best at those, all the things that make you a captain. Some of them are intangibles, they're not stats, you know, it's not like influence 20 on fucking Footy Manager. Yeah. There's more to it than one column on a spreadsheet that tells you what a captain is, and there's loads of lads who've got all of the contributing factors to it, and he possesses the most of all of those things.
Yeah.
Because in addition to that, he's also able to get himself on the pitch. You know, where's Jordan Henderson's rest been? We've been rotating this side massively this last fortnight. Mm. Where's Jordan Henderson's rest? Jordan Henderson's not just been resting. He played centre half. Yeah. He played centre half for the first time in his career in a game. Just stepped up and did it. And was he amazing? No, he's never played fucking centre half before. Yeah. But he did a good job in that. And that's been Jordan Henderson all over for me. I think he's brilliant, and I love the fact that we're going to see those trophy lifts forever and ever and ever. He's made this an iconic thing. It's, you know, we're not going to appreciate it now. In years to come, you know, there's kids growing up who are young watching that, and that would be their first moment, so that would be their biggest moment as teenagers and young men and young women and all that kind of stuff. That this will just be cemented in Liverpool's history forever. Yeah. Like, I know Graeme Souness was amazing. I never watched him play for Liverpool. I'm too young to watch that, but it's just accepted. Yeah. And I love the fact that there's people who just loathe Jordan Henderson. Just strange people who loathe him. Don't mind if you don't think he's great, but there's people who loathe him. And I love the fact that they have to exist in a world where he is going to be one of the most decorated Liverpool captains of all time. I just think it shoves it right in the face, and it makes me smile.
I think as well, more than anything else, it's a testament to who he is as a person, as a human being, first and foremost, because he, and I think this with a lot of footballers, especially as you said before about the French and the Italians, or, you know, if he was under a different nationality, we'd probably have different views towards him. The fact of the matter is, for me, English players, when they get to sign for the big six, they can easily fall into the trap of becoming complacent and having that feeling of entitlement. I should start every game. I should be the poster boy. I should be the captain. They
could have all of the... admitted this when he signed for Liverpool. He said that he felt that he made it when he walked in the door.
And it's a level of entitlement that some players do have, and some players have got the quality to back it up. But Jordan Henderson realised very early on in his Liverpool career there was a ceiling that everyone doubted he could ever reach. Mm-hmm. And the only way that he would get there is if he kept knocking on the door, punching through the door, knocking on the next door, punching through the next door. Yep. And he's gone up through the gears over the last 3 or 4 years to the point now where he is. You can't knock the work rate that he's put in, because it's a mentality thing. He's told himself, I have got no God-given right to start in this, to be in the starting 11. Mm-hmm. The only way I guarantee my space is if I lead by example, train hard, and put in the hard yards when I get the chance on the pitch, and he's doing all of that.
And look at all the big goals we've scored in recent weeks. Jordan Henderson's fingerprints are all over it in different ways. You know, it's about 13-14, all the best stuff we did that season. Jordan Henderson is the guy before, he's either the pass, the assist pass, or he's the pass before that, and he's back to being that again. You can't, he's so integral to what we do, and he's supposed to be gone.
Yeah.
And you might, people might argue, well, Fabinho getting injured is a factor in that. But again, Liverpool have started keeping clean sheets. We've gotten better. We're winning things without Fabinho. Henderson was there before Fabinho. He's upped his level since he's arrived. And now that he's out the team, you're seeing an even better Jordan Henderson in a position that he's meant to be, oh, rubber shadow or whatever. Yeah, yeah. I just think Jordan Henderson's great and he deserves all the success in the world.
There's something not on Jordan Henderson that I want to go on before we finish. The support for Mohamed Salah, and Ross can back me up on this, in the ground was something I have never seen in my entire life. This is a fella going back to an area of the world that he's lived in. They absolutely adore him over there. So obviously he won the Golden Ball, didn't he? Oh. And then he won some other trophy, which I think in my head is just an excuse to get him on screen there, because the amount of times he picked up the ball and the crowd rose, and that's both legs, both games. And it was fantastic to see that, just how much this player is loved. This Liverpool player is loved like that around the world.
They were just chanting Salah repeatedly, but it was deafening.
It was deafening.
It was on another level. Even when he did the team news on the screens at the beginning, it's like a roar to the players, whatever. Yeah. But then the whole stadium when Salah came on was just like, rah.
And I didn't realise just how much, just as an aside to the game, I didn't realise just how much he could be loved. We love him at this club, but they love him as a person, as just a he's like an activist in his own right, and the fact that he's playing at the biggest football club in the world.
Well, it's just that thing, isn't it? You know, from a Liverpool perspective, Liverpool fans worldwide will support a player because they're a Liverpool player, but in being a Muslim means that there's, like, you know, everyone of the Muslim faith who pays attention to him existing. I've been in Turkey, and you're talking to people, and they want to talk to you about Mohamed Salah. You're right. Amazing.
It was not emotional in the sense I was crying, but I was just like, wow. I just wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic. Well, gents. Oh, actually, one last point on the Jordan Henderson stuff. That midfield three we played with, Fabinho, our incredible number six, who's the best number six in the world, was fucking dead when he walked off the pitch when he played in a midfield three with Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita. Played against Genk and he walked off the pitch like he had been abused for that time, because he'd had to do all the days. Remember that? And Jordan Henderson was still shouting at people at the end of extra time. So, yeah. Amazing. Right, yes, thank you for watching, for listening, and for subscribing to the YouTube channel. We made it to 400,000 subscribers.
Yeah, saw that.
Well done, everyone. Thank you very much to those of you who are watching and have subscribed as well. If you want more, the redmentv.com makes everything that we do tick. Head over there and subscribe. We've got extra videos for you going out over the Christmas period and, of course, into the new year with Liverpool ploughing their way towards hopefully a 19th league title. We'll have you covered the whole way. It's completely free for the first month. So yeah, head over to theredmentv.com and sign up. Ta-da.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweater starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.